Sure Sheen Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Shalom, everyone. Bill Cloud once again. Thank you for joining us today. We have been talking about Babylon, and specifically we're dealing with mystery Babylon. And by that, I do not mean an undisclosed entity that we don't know who and what they are, or institution or nation, because I don't believe that mystery Babylon is the correct way that we should look at this, but it's a mystery about Babylon. In short, how does a dead, archaic civilization come back to life? So much so that the world will stand in awe. And so what we've been trying to do in these programs is look into the mystery concerning Babylon. Now, in the last couple of programs, what we've shared is focused on Revelation chapter 17 and some very intricate scriptures that would be easily misunderstood. And so what we've been trying to do is break them down point by point to unravel the mystery that is Babylon, and to unravel the mystery that the angel tells John is there's a mystery about the woman, but there's also a mystery about the beast. And so this is what we've been looking at. And so in the previous program, we were discussing the mystery concerning the beast, in particular, the seven heads and what they represent, and how five had fallen. One was in John's day, another was coming in the future from John's point of view. But one of the main things that we tried to point out is because the angel said that the beast that you're looking at, John, was, that is, it used to be, and is not, it's not here presently, John, then the beast cannot be Rome. It can't be Rome. Because Rome was present there in John's day, and the angel very clearly says the beast is not right now, John. And yet the spirit of the beast is with us, because the spirit of Antichrist has always been with us. He was told that there's these five principalities, these heads, five of them had fallen. One is in your day, John. Well, that would be Rome. So Rome does play a role, but Rome is not equivalent to the beast. And then there was going to be one that would come in the future, as we said. But that one is only going to continue a short time. And then there's going to be a king that comes after him who, as it turns out, is actually one of those seven. Well, he's not going to be the seventh because that one comes and goes. If it was that one, why didn't he just stay on and there not be an eighth one? No, that eighth king that's coming is going to be one of those seven. And it even gets more specific that it has to be one of those five that had already fallen. And so what we're getting at here is everything in the scripture is pointing to us that Babylon is equivalent to the beast. Even if that seventh principality that John is told is going to come and continue a short space, even if that was a revived Roman Empire, it's only going to continue a short space. And it's going to be followed by that eighth king who is of the seven, more specifically of the five that had already fallen. Again, everything is pointing us back to Babylon because Babylon is the head of gold in Daniel chapter 2. I believe Babylon is the head of the beast that receives the deadly wound, but the deadly wound was healed because Jeremiah was told that when Babylon is destroyed, lament for her, pray for her, give her balm, maybe she'll be healed. Babylon is what is referred to in Revelation 18. Babylon the Great is fallen. So all of this is to say that the identity of the beast seems to be synonymous with Babylon. Now, we also have been talking about the woman that rides the beast in Revelation 17 and what she might represent. One of the things we needed to point out once again is the woman is not the beast. The beast is not the woman. However, what is written on her forehead seems to connect her to Babylon. Let's read once again in Revelation chapter 17, verse 5. It says this, mystery. Notice the comma there that's in most all the translations, which means to pause. Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and of the abominations of the earth. So here's why I'm reading this time. The question would be, what is Babylon? Is it a city? Is it a people? Is it a region? Is it a king? Is it a person? Or Is it a mindset? And my answer to that is yes. It's all of those things. Because you can't just make it one or the other, because the Bible doesn't really work that way in many things. You can have a prophecy that we can relate to two and three different things. For instance, in Hosea chapter 11, God says, I have called my son out of Egypt, referring back to when Israel came out of Egypt, because he told Moses to tell Pharaoh, Israel is my son, even my firstborn. So Hosea says, I have called my son out of Egypt. But then when Messiah is born, Matthew says that when Joseph took Mary and the Messiah down into Egypt to flee from Herod, after Herod died, they left Egypt and went back to Israel, fulfilling the prophecy, out of Egypt I have called my son, Hosea chapter 11. So biblically, Hebraically, it doesn't have to be one or the other necessarily. It can be all of the above. So yes, Babylon can be a city. Babylon can be a region. Babylon can be a state of mind. And so people in times past have tried to make Mystery Babylon to be the UN or the United States or the EU or the Catholic Church and say, well, it has to be this for this reason. And then they'll tell you why it has to be this, and you'll think, well, yeah, well, that makes sense. And then they'll say, well, here's why the United States is Mystery Babylon, or here's why the EU or the UN is Mystery Babylon. And you read all these different ideas, and they go, and you think to yourself, yeah, I can see that. But then you'll read why the other one is, and you'll think, wow, yeah, I can see that too. Why is that? Because Babylon is a way of thinking more than anything else that permeates every nation, every denomination, every institution, every industry, every individual to some degree. The entire world has been influenced by what Babylon is. Because Babylon, as I said, more than anything else, because it's the mother of our of harlotry and of the abominations of the earth. All of the harlotry and all the abominations that are everywhere in the world emanates from and originated from Babylon. And that's the point. Now, I do believe that there is a, if not a specific city that is Babylon, there is most definitely a particular region that is Babylon. And that place is in Mesopotamia. And so because there is a place called Babylon, it merits us taking a look at that. With that thought in mind, this is one of the reasons that I'm not convinced that the United States is Babylon or is Mystery Babylon. Because Babylon, the way of thinking, has been with us for a long, long time. Even in John's day, it was there. So you can't make one thing or one nation or one institution Babylon, because everything has been influenced by Babylon. But again, there is a specific region in the Bible called Babylon or Babylonia. In Jeremiah chapter 50, verse 45, Jeremiah refers to Babylon as being the land of the Chaldeans. So there is a particular place. So here's why I'm bringing that up. Even after I've said that Babylon is more than anything else a mindset, nevertheless, there was a place, there was a geographical location where we see the introduction of this mindset and this way of thinking and this trying to assert this kind of control over people. So now we're going to go back and look at literal Babylon, because again, Babylon is the head of gold in Daniel 2. That's where all this originates from, and all the kingdoms that would follow, Persia, the Grecians, the Romans, all the way down to the end of days, are ultimately going to be influenced by what happened or what started in the region called the land of the Chaldeans, or the region that is Babylon. Because Babylon, as we see in the very beginning, is the antithesis of what God says or what God declares. Babylon is equivalent to rebellion. And this rebellion first begins, in this region anyway, under Nimrod. So let's go to Genesis chapter 10. We're going to read a little bit about Nimrod. Beginning in verse 8, it says this. Cush begot Nimrod, and he began to be a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore it is said, like Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, Erech, Akkad, and Calneh in the land of Shinar. Now, it says that he began to be a mighty one upon the earth. Before that time, there is no mention of a mighty one upon the earth. The only mighty one was the Creator himself. But Nimrod began to assert himself as being a mighty one, and what we see is that he established a kingdom. And this verse that we just read is the first time a kingdom is mentioned, other than the kingdom of God that would be inferred, but this is the first kingdom mentioned. And so you cannot have a kingdom if you don't first have a king. Well, that would be Nimrod, who began to be a mighty one upon the earth. And it says that he was a mighty hunter, lifnei Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, before the Lord. Actually, literally, in the face of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. So why does it tell us that he's a mighty hunter? Because it's understood he's not hunting game, he's hunting men. He's hunting subjects. Because if you're going to have a kingdom and you're the king, you need subjects. And what are subjects? People who have subjected their will to yours. Now, the Jewish sage Rashi wrote that Nimrod ensnared men with his words, and then he provoked them to rebel against God. So he's a very clever, very shrewd man. He is hunting people. And what does he use? Words. According to the Midrash, he would, through these words, instill a false confidence in people, and he would entrap these people. He would set a snare, because that's what a hunter does. He would set a snare for these people by his words. He would make them feel confident in what he was telling them, but then what he would do is, once they have subjected themselves to him, once he's deceived them, then he has brought them over to joining him in opposing God, not posing as God, but opposing God and becoming God to those people. He would be the first one, according to literature, to drape himself. This is the way it's written in Jewish commentary. He would drape himself in robes of piety. In other words, he would try to present himself as being something he was not. He would try to make people think that he was a humble person, that he had their best interest in mind, but he did that in order to deceive the masses. And once he deceived the masses, he would rule over them as a tyrant. That's what Nimrod is. He accomplished this through words, which follows the methodology of the adversary from the beginning, who comes posing as an angel of light and through words seduces people into joining him in rebellion against God, in opposition to God, not posing as God, but opposing God so that he might be God. Well, what does the Antichrist do in the end of days? He asserts himself above anything that is God, and makes himself to be God, but not posing as the true God, but opposing the true God. The big difference here. That's what Nimrod is all about, and his kingdom begins at Babel, or we say Babylon. So Babylon, from the very beginning, was built in order to oppose God, to rebel against God's instructions. Let me read to you from Genesis chapter 11, beginning at verse 1. This is about the origination of Babylon. It says, "Now the whole earth had one language and one speech. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said to one another, 'Come, let us make brick and bake them thoroughly.' And they had brick for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar, and they said, 'Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth.'" Now, the first thing we want to address in these verses here is that they were of one language and one speech. And what that's really telling me is not only did they speak the same language, words, but they had the same mindset. They were of one accord as far as what, the way they were thinking. And what were they thinking? Well, we need to come together. Now, keep it in mind, this city that's being developed, who's behind it all? Nimrod. Because that's where his kingdom began. And Nimrod is a deceiver. But why is he deceiving? Because he wants the people to join him in opposition to God, because he wants to make himself to be as God. Not posing as the true God, but opposing the true God. So they have come into this mindset of, let's come together. Let's coexist. And it says that they had journeyed from the east. Now what that means is this. The Hebrew word for west is ma'arav. Ma'arav. And ma'arav is derived from a Hebrew root word that means to mix and to mingle. And the etymology behind this is, if you are heading toward the west, you are headed toward the setting of the sun. And the setting of the sun is when light mixes with darkness, when day mingles with night. So the term ma'arav, or west, is derived from the root term that means to mix or to mingle. Theologically, what this is telling us is not only physically are they journeying from the east, meaning headed toward the west, headed toward the setting of the sun, but they're headed away, theologically speaking, from what is pure, from what is true, and from what is holy, and they're headed toward mixing things together, taking light and mixing it with darkness, taking truth and mixing it with falsehood, taking pure and mixing it with polluted. That's what's really going on here, and that's why they come into the mindset of let's come together, let's coexist, let's be tolerant of one another, and let's build a city. And here's how we're going to do it. We're going to have to mix and mingle with one another in order to accomplish our goal, these global aspirations of being one people with one mind, one accord. So let's make the city of brick. Because brick is something that is not created. It is something that is man-made. And to make bricks, you have to mix clay, you have to mix straw, and men mixes all this together so that everything is uniform, so that there is conformity, so that there is no one that is going to be more powerful or richer than the other as far as among the masses. Everybody's going to be able to enjoy social justice. That is, except for the people who are ruling over the masses, the tyrants. That's the Nimrods. That's what we see in the end of days. But they had to get the people into the mindset of coming together and mixing and mingling. The woman rides the beast, and she epitomizes mixing and mingling. But before all is said and done, when the beast is through with her, the ten kings destroy her with fire. So we see this going on. And they're making bricks. Again, that's mixing and mingling. And they're making this city. Cain made a city. Cain was a rebel as well. But this city also had a tower that reached up into the heavens, if you will, in God's face. Because Nimrod was a mighty hunter, literally, it says, in the face of the Lord. So they're doing all of this. Why? It says to make a name for themselves. Let us make a name for ourselves. The word for name is the Hebrew word Shem. And Shem literally means authority. So what they were really saying was this, let's build this city of brick. Let's come together. Let's coexist. Let's build a tower that is in the face of God, so to speak. And let us establish our authority. We're coming together to establish our rule, our law, not posing as God, but opposing God. And the clincher is because they said, lest we be scattered abroad across the face of the whole earth. Because God had told Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth to multiply, to spread out, to populate the earth. But what was Nimrod compelling the people to do and influenced them to do? To come together, establish our authority in opposition to his authority, because he wants us to spread out throughout the earth. We want to come together in the earth. And where did they do this? in the land of Shinar, which is interesting because according to Zechariah 5, that's the place where this woman who's called wickedness is taken. Let me read to you from Zechariah 5, beginning at verse 5. Then the angel who talked with me came out and said to me, "Lift your eyes now and see what this is that goes forth." And so I asked, "What is it?" And he said, "It is a basket that is going forth." And he also said, "This is their resemblance throughout the earth. Here is a lead disc lifted up, and this is a woman sitting inside the basket." Then he said, "This," referring to the woman, "this is wickedness." And he thrust her down into the basket and threw the lead cover over its mouth. Then I raised my eyes and looked, and there were two women coming with the wind in their wings, for they had wings like the wings of a stork. And they lifted up the basket between earth and heaven. And so I said to the angel who talked with me, "Where are they carrying the basket?" Which contains the woman, of course. And he said to me, "To build a house for it in the land of Shinar. And when it is ready, the basket will be set there on its base." Now, we've talked about this particular prophecy in previous programs, but just to kind of summarize real quickly, this woman is represented as being wickedness. And wickedness is not necessarily or exclusive to those blatant and obvious things that we would call wicked: murder, rape, theft, those kinds of things. Yes, it includes those, of course. But wickedness, literally, from a Hebraic point of view, is simply breaking the law. That is, God's laws. And most of the time, God's laws are broken in this fashion, by taking some of what he says and mixing it with something else. By taking away from what he says those things that we don't like and adding to what he says the things that we do. So wickedness really boils down to mixing and mingling. The congregation of Laodicea is a mixed congregation. Messiah says, "You're not hot, you're not cold, you're lukewarm." That's a mixture of the two. He said, "I would rather that you be hot or cold," which is to say, if you're not going to be righteous, then go ahead and be wicked totally, because at least everybody knows what you are. But because you mix these things together, that's really wicked, because that's where deception takes place. That's how people are deceived, where there is mixing and mingling. And so that's what this woman represents. And notice, she's placed in the basket and relocated to the land of Shinar. And when it's time, it says, she will be set there on its base. And that word base is to infer this: origination. You see, Babylon, which was constructed in the land of Shinar, is the mother of all harlots and of all the abominations of the earth. That's where wickedness emanates from. And the wickedness that Babylon epitomizes is mixing and mingling, tolerance, coexistence, coming together, establishing our authority in the opposition to God's authority. God says that a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave unto his wife, and the two shall be one flesh. But man's authority is now saying, it doesn't have to work that way. It can be two men. It can be two women. We are establishing our authority even as we come together in tolerance and coexistence, not posing as the true God, but opposing the true God to assert his authority. Rebellion. That's what Babylon is. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is exactly what we're seeing going on right now. Now, this woman that was in the basket, I believe, is released from that basket. And that's the very woman we see in Revelation 17, the scarlet-clothed woman, who is supposed to receive only the seed of her husband, but who has gone out and committed fornication with the kings of the earth, committed fornication with these other kings, receiving their seed and mixing all this seed together. And in my opinion, this woman that's written of in Revelation 17 and Revelation 19, whose fornication has corrupted the very earth, I believe that woman is the same woman that we read about in Zechariah chapter 5. But what does that woman represent? The mindset, the way of thinking. But you know what happens to that woman? She ends up being destroyed. She rides the beast for a little while. She cooperates with the beast for a little while. She coexists with the beast for a little while. But when the beast has had enough, when the 10 kings have had enough, she's destroyed with fire. And at that point, ladies and gentlemen, this beast is going to stamp out and to destroy. So here's where we're at. We're talking about Mystery Babylon. I don't believe it's some ethereal entity. I believe the mystery is about Babylon. And what we understand about Babylon, it is seductive, it is deceptive, but it is in opposition to everything the Creator stands for. And the adversary from the very beginning has always sought to destroy God's Word, God's people. But how does he do it? He does it through words. He's very seductive. He's very shrewd in how he does it. And today, I believe we see the rise of Babylon. We're beginning to understand the mystery of Babylon, because Babylon is preaching coexistence, and that message is now beginning to permeate the church. Come back and join me next week. Until then, shalom.
Like what you're hearing? Become a BuiltCloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BuiltCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.